couple announcements. Like I said, David, give me a heads up. He's out of town. Haven't heard, but Sue Renata and Heller Gill are not coming. Announcements. We are recording, just so you know. I will try to get in the habit of reminding everybody of that. We post this along with all the materials on the website. It's kind of hard to find, but you know, eventually it's there. And this is part of the Open Meetings Act, which presumably all district agencies should be following, but there you go. We have Rachel Redfern and they don't, so they may not have swept through as thoroughly what the regulations are. Data. I wanted to give everybody an update on the data requests talked about before from the Sentencing Commission. Yesterday, late in the afternoon, I got a response, which is, again, to the data requests that we submitted in late October. I hadn't had, prior to this, hadn't had any communication from the Sentencing Commission in response to queries since early December. But what I received yesterday was a data set and the data dictionary. Now, we're looking at it right now, but what I wanted to say was kind of, it's clear already that it's missing some key data. It has no misdemeanor information whatsoever, which we previously received from the Sentencing Commission while we were there in a kind of a smaller subset. There's also no rationale offered for why that wasn't provided this time. So, you know, misdemeanors, that's huge. It doesn't include any information on fines. Now, it's also not clear from an initial look that that is even in the data dictionary, which is to say it's not an element that they either have the capacity to search for or at least profess to be able to search for. Fines are listed in the data elements coming from the courts, right? So the court keeps track of this, what criminal fines are imposed. The Victims of Crime Fund, you know, amount, specific amount that is imposed. None of that information shows up either in the data dictionary received. Chanel Renata just joined us.
Hello, welcome. Hi, Renata.
Hi.
Chanel's on the phone. She's the only one on the phone.
Okay.
And I was just recounting a bit on the data request from the Sentencing Commission. We got some data, but what we're missing is misdemeanor information, information on fines, and again, it's not clear to me. We're going to look a little bit more at the data set that we got. But it's kind of interesting. It may be that the Sentencing Commission is not tracking this at all, which would also be unusual. You know, the Fine Proportionality Act was something that came out of the Sentencing Commission. But it's something I think, you know, important for us as we're kind of looking forward at sentencing options to see, you know, I think anecdotally everybody would say criminal fines are rare, rarely imposed. But for certain offenses, you know, fraud in particular, the current code and the Fine Proportionality Act went out of its way to make sure that that's an available penalty. So we're going to follow up on that. There's also no, we didn't receive information on concurrent consecutive sentencing, which obviously, you know, kind of if you're trying to figure out what's going on with sentencing, that's very important. So, as well as some charging information, which the cover letter we got did say that that was information that the Sentencing Commission gets from USAO. So I might, we'll look at it some more. I might follow up with Renata about that or try to figure out what's going on. Anyway, we got a big piece of data. It's going to allow us to move forward a bit, particularly on felonies. But we're missing some pieces still, and we're going to need to resolve that. So put you all on alert. I may be asking for help vis-a-vis the Sentencing Commission, those of you, you know, ties there. I'd also note that we, while not finalized, we've been working a bit with the lab at DC.
Can I time out just on the data for one second?
Sure.
Only to say I cannot
remember what their request was, but it was recent. It was the past 2 months at least that I actually was had suggested or was answering a question from a council member's office. And said, you know, they might have someone to stay at the Sentencing Commission. And I was like, and you could probably get it more easily than me or more quickly. And they got the response from the commission of, we don't, it was like, we can't verify or we haven't done a quality check on misdemeanors. So, so that was the, so I assume they would say the same thing as for why you didn't get misdemeanors. And I didn't get the sense it was like, and that will never happen, but I don't know. But I was certainly what
they were told. And that makes sense. That was an issue before we kind of broached, and back when we were at the Sentencing Commission, we kind of eventually said, well, we understand you haven't cleaned the data. You haven't validated it. To go back through and see, oh, you know, that shoplifting sentence for 40 years, something was wrong with that, we need to follow up. You know, like, there are going to be errors in that that they haven't cleaned. They're just getting the data feed from the courts on that. But even regardless, you know, that would be helpful to us, right? Even if it has
more piece of information. I believe this week or next week, the mayor is going to sign the new data policy governing all district agencies. I am not certain that that covers independence, and so may not have an effect on the Sentencing Commission, but that data policy means that all data will be classified as having one of four levels of protection and ability to distribute. And it is specifically designed to facilitate interagency data sharing for much of the data, even when that data is not made public, so long as very specific protocols are made apparent. And that will go, I believe, into effect in a week or 2 weeks as soon as the mayor signs it. So that may...
That may be a factor as well.
It also grants the city administrator's office ability to request any of that data where it's pertinent to evaluation of some policy. So,
And that goes a bit to another point, which is, so what are we doing with this data? Our goal is to really use that in understanding both up front as we're kind of proposing, you know, reforms for specific offenses. What offenses are charged? What aren't? Of those that are charged, how are those? You know, is UUV frequently charged with theft? In which case, you know, is that because, you know, an indicator that they're similar elements, that they're occurring at the same time? What's going on? A number of ways in which, again, at the level of determining the elements of offenses and which offenses we need to be looking at, it's helpful up front. It's also helpful in looking at gradations to the extent that we see, you know, kind of clustering in two areas. You know, robbery in the district includes both pickpocketing and the kind of more violent personal interaction, right? So, you know, part of the explanation that we may see in the data is kind of clustering that kind of shows that we have really two kind of typical fact patterns that are reflected in the sentencing. At the end game is the biggest one, though, in terms of like recommendations on proportionality for sentencing. To that end, in particular, we're going to work with the lab at DC, which is a, I guess, an office offshoot within the Office of the City Administrator. So within the mayor's umbrella, in they have some data analysts, they have some social scientists. Don knows a lot more about their workings there, if anybody's interested. And we're just in the process of kind of figuring out how we're going to be working with them. But in principle, we do, you know, we have a kind of an oral agreement that they're going to be doing some work to look at this data and help pull out the relevant pieces. Since we aren't data analysts, you know, they're going to help provide that kind of expertise, at least for this FY17, is what we're looking at now. that's that. Just want to give you all an update on that.
Yeah. I'm sorry that yeah. it's late. So it's good to know the purpose for which this was requested. That's helpful. It makes sense. Can you just very quickly categorize again the data that we are still
waiting.
Seeking or waiting for?
Right. I don't want to do it with too much specificity because since we... probably it's right before you walked in. We just got the data set last night.
Okay.
So we're still going through it, but what we can tell up front is that we're missing all misdemeanor information. We're missing appears any information on fines, criminal fines, Victims of Crime Act assessments, anything financial. And we're missing a bunch of data elements that appear to give an indication about whether the sentencing was concurrent or consecutive.
Okay. Yeah, I get
Those are the three main ones. And then the fourth, was charging information. So right now we don't, you know, if it, at arrest or at any point before the charge code used at sentencing. We don't know how that might have morphed earlier in the process. Arrested for X, eventually indicted on Y. Maybe there was a subsequent change and conviction on Z. All we've got is Z. We don't know anything kind of upstream. And that was something that we'd requested.
Sorry, I left out the one piece that I meant to.
Yeah.
The whole reason I said all of that was to say to the folks who are on the Sentencing Commission, a specific piece of the data policy is that quality control is not supposed to be a reason to not share data. You just say you don't have, it's not quality controlled, and then with that caveat, make sure that the people who are receiving it understand that there may be quality problems, right? Because every single agency has quality problems with all of their data, and if that were the reason you couldn't share data, no one would share data with anyone.
Well, and good. So I'm happy to follow up with folks on this. Again, evolving. I just want to keep everybody kind of up to date as far as I can. Again, we're going to look a deeper dive at it the next day or two and kind of assess like what more is missing that's kind of critical. All right. That said, I don't really have any other announcements. And so, again, Dave's not joining us. Renata, I don't know if you knew that, but
he's
somewhere warm.
Time,
yes. I know, you know, he was on call for the inauguration weekend of, like, you know, 48 hours of, yeah. So, two pieces to the agenda. The first was the first report, the kind of enactment and other amendments report. We went through everybody's comments. They were redistributed. And we kind of did up this memo that describes kind of what we did based on those comments. And the one that we affirmatively wanted to kind of reach out and grapple with you all is this one. Described it, it's number 10. This is in our memo back to you, advisory group memo number 4. It's on page 5. It's on the screen. But basically, it's a comment from OAG. It got voiced a bit at the last meeting. And what they actually wrote, let me maybe pull up to what the actual comment was this one here. It's under the comments on the draft bill. It said, the very beginning of the bill, prior to any numbered sections, includes a, quote, statement of legislative intent. A statement of legislative intent would be beneficial as part of this bill's legislative history. But in order for it to be incorporated into the bill, it should be given a section number, formatted according to the drafting manual from the council, and placed after the, quote, be enacted portion. Now, I wasn't quite sure how to read that. I had a follow-up meeting with Dave on this, and what he clarified was that what by putting it in the after the be it enacted portion of the bill, and I'll pull that up so you can kind of see what that looks like right now. There we go. So right now, here's the bill. It's in that Appendix 9. It's, you know, again, it's basically reciting all of Title 22, so it's very long. You know, it starts out with the preface. The bill itself, great, gives the kind of title there, table of contents for the bill, and then immediately goes to the statement of legislative intent, which has this kind of key language in the first paragraph that council finds it necessary to enact. The title, it does not intend enactment to substantively change the laws therein, except for the specific changes noted in this statement of legislative intent. Nor does the council intend enactment of Title 22 to indicate a legislative approval or disapproval of any court decisions construing the laws therein. It then proceeds to note what is being specifically repealed. You know, it just provides them the details because, again, what we're accomplishing by the bill is both enactment of the existing language, but it's also doing some tweaks, right? It's also, you know, changing, updating that reference to the workhouse of the District of Columbia, you know, to the Women's Bureau and the all these things. So it is making some changes that are intended in the code, and that's why we're breaking those out to specifically note in the legislative intent, hey, these changes are intended other than this. Everything else is, again, the kind of formal enactment of the existing law in Title 22. Question is, at the end of this statement of legislative intent, do we do something more? Now, I will say right now, we're already, by placing that statement of legislative intent, and Dave's comment had referred to this, the council has a drafting manual, how they prefer to see bills. Now, that manual doesn't really talk about enactment. Enactment's such a strange, kind of rare thing to occur. But their normal policy is they, quote, strongly discourage including statements of intent or legislative intent in the bill. They prefer to see it in the committee report and standard course of things. What we've done is by putting it before the be it enacted portion, it would not go into the new title, the enacted Title 22. And I think that's what Dave's point was. He wants something. Now, not that whole long, lengthy thing that lists all the exceptions. You know, oh, well, we did mean to change, you know, workhouse to DC jail here. We did mean to change his to his or hers. He doesn't want all of that in the new Title 22. Codifying that is just kind of crazy, he seemed to say. But he did want something short after the be it enacted portion that would be codified into law. So it would actually be a new section. It'd be like 22-100 or something of this sort. And it would be a statement that says something like, and I took a stab at kind of like what I thought he was talking about in the memo, it could say something like this. The enactment into law of Title 22 by the enactment of law of Title 22 by the enactment of Title 22 and other criminal code reform, other criminal code revisions act of 2017 shall not constitute legislative approval or disapproval of past court interpretations of the unenacted statutes and shall not affect substantive changes to law, except as evident in that law's legislative history. Something that gets, he wanted it to address the no substantive change and that we're not touching judicial decisions. And he wanted it codified in Title 22. Now again, this is based on kind of my after conversation with him. The written comments doesn't leap out that that's kind of where they were going. So, I wanted to present that to everybody because this would be a very an unusual thing. We're not aware, certainly when the district has previously enacted titles, it has not done this sort of thing. It hasn't codified in the new enacted code a statement to the fact that about what enactment is. It's left that to legislative history. And as far as we can tell, it's also left it to legislative history at the committee report level. So what we've done is already, we've elevated it a bit by putting it in the preface to the bill, but before the be it enacted language. So, you know, that's what's getting voted on. You can't just say, well, that was the committee report. It got kind of, you know, buried in our, you know, it's in the bill, but it wouldn't be codified the way we've proposed it. Now, Dave left shortly after as we were putting this together, so I haven't had a subsequent conversation with him, but this is the kind of the one issue where they had a clear ask from OAG in their comments that this be changed, and I wasn't sure that is at this point something that we would recommend, and so wanted to check back with everybody. Last thing I kind of say, and I put this in the write-up, was, you know, because this kind of goes against the drafting norms for the Office of General Counsel, the DC Council, and whatever we do, whatever we issue, is going to go to them for review. I'm not sure this shouldn't trip things up. In other words, they're going to have the last say, and everybody, you know, at the table would have certainly a voice in kind of going to the council again and saying, yeah, you know, OIG here, we think this, there should be this extra code section about what enactment means. Certainly welcome to do that, but I don't want to trip things up with the Office of General Counsel at the DC Council over this, and frankly, I'm not sure what their outcome is going to be, right? Like, they haven't looked at this whole thing yet. And when they do, they may have a very strong opinion that you're doing something novel and we think it should be codified. Maybe something like, you know, it's drafted here. Or no, it stays out. I don't know, but I don't want that to hold us up moving forward with this. Any thoughts from you all about this comment and recommendation from OAG to codify? Again, these are my words in the memo, because I wasn't sure exactly what Dave was thinking. This seemed to be, based on the conversation, in the ballpark of what he was thinking, but I certainly don't want to ascribe to him that this language, this is our taking a shot at, like, addressing his concern. Those of you here, you know, yay, nay, unnecessary.
I'm sorry if I missed it.
Yeah.
So I feel like you did a good interpretation job of what they wanted.
Yeah.
But I didn't hear you say what they said was the reason they wanted it.
Yeah.
Why is this?
That was not. I mean, you know, the written comments didn't say. My sense is from the conversation, and I again want to be careful not to put words in their mouth, is that it would. It would further clarify, it would give a hook in statutory language that would be stronger and perhaps critical. It wasn't clear to me if this was a matter of degree or whether no. OAG thinks that by having it codified versus merely in legislative history, you know, before that be an enacted language or just in the committee report, whether they think it's a matter of degree or a change, but that would significantly help prevent misinterpretations of the intent here. Now, I got to say, we've gone over this a number of times at staff level. We kind of have blurry vision now when we look at this, because from our take, we don't see the worst case scenario here of kind of misconstrual is not bad. It's not clear how misconstruing this would end up with a bad result. So we don't think it's necessary to codify this. I think that's, you know, our position. But the exact basis for why OAG wants that, I don't know if it's a matter of degree of just like, you know, hey, it would be even better, it would be even clearer to codify it, or whether it's it's a legislative history, we're going to have a set of problems that we won't if it's codified. So I can't speak more to that.
Yeah. So I realize Steve's not here, but I would just recommend taking a kind of contingency plan and going back to OAG and to the council with it to say, like, we're going to include this as the default, but we have a contingency draft that says that if, you know, the codification council doesn't like it, then we're going to move it over here. Any objections to that? OAG, any objections to that? And I think we're done.
Okay, so...
I think it's just a technical issue that...
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I can't understand it. It seems odd to me because it seems to be about guidance for legislative interpretation, which doesn't answer the question of when you should get to the point of interpreting, of going beyond a plain reading of the statute. So, like, it doesn't answer that question. It's just once you've decided that's where you're going to go, are you allowed to? But this, as it's written up, or even if you took it word for word, what's in the bill now doesn't tell you when to go beyond. And once you're going beyond, does it matter that there's a statute that says you're allowed to go beyond when you decide to, or whether it's already in the legislative history that says if you decide to go beyond, you can go beyond beyond. So it seems to not, I don't, it's, and to me then it sort of sets up this as if it does something to put it in a statute. And is this just the first time that we get nervous about wanting to send an extra message, so we keep starting to load it into the code? I guess I don't see this harm, other than it looks like it's doing something when it's not. And is this then the opening the door to, you know, when we really, really, really mean it, even though it doesn't really happen other places in the code, we ought to not trust legislative history. We ought to stick it in the code somewhere. Which is like the thing we're trying to not do, is have this overloaded crap in the code, right?
Yeah.
So I vote, to the extent there's a contingency, it's theirs. But not the, but that we sort of go forward. Unless, you know, I'm also happy to, I mean, I don't know what our timing is, to give Dave or someone else a chance to come and tell me which is the part I'm missing.
They want to hear what they were trying to achieve. So.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, I agree with Laura, in part because if we give legislative history kind of extra authority by using this means, then that kind of sends a message that when it's not part of the actual statute, then it doesn't have the same authority. And I'm not sure we want to send that message. And just as a practical matter, I mean, the council has people whose job it is to just conform laws to what they're supposed to look like, right? So it seems to me that they that would be the inevitable result.
Yeah, I think I agree with everything that's said. I think we aren't in a rush on this, right? This is kind of a, you know, as we've always kind of said, this is kind of a separate thing from, like, the bread and butter issues of revising specific offenses and the general part and senses, you know. So timeline wise, I'm not worried about taking a little more time. So what we can do is, you know, Dave gets back. You know, I think he'd been even hoping to have some kind of response to this, but I think he just got jammed in getting out the door. So we can revisit this if they feel strongly about, like, one way or the other. Again, is it default in or default out? It sounds like a contingency, or just making clear when it goes to Office of General Counsel, who are the folks who are going to do this, here's what we intend, here's what we think, you know, is the way to accomplish it, and just be clear about that. Hopefully that will address OAG's concern, but also, you know, again, ultimately it's up to the council how they want to do this. So I guess if those are thoughts, I don't know if any others, but like...
Well, let me just... Everyone agrees that this is kind of like the intent language that we're interested in evolving.
Well, we do. I you know, again, I'm not positive without Dave, like, you know, I don't want to assume that there isn't some other kernel underlying this, like, that's like...
If you,
as far as I can tell.
And I didn't hear from you that you've already gone to Codification Council and that they have said, no, don't do this, or yes, this is how you should do it. Like, if you go to them and you ask them and they say, do it this way or don't do it this way, then you go back to OAG and they say, don't do it, then...
Sure. I think the only thing is, before we go to Codification Council with this, this is going to open up the whole thing for them, right? Like, and I think rightly so, they're going to want to, like, say, okay, we need to assess this whole thing, right? Like, before we can give...
But isn't there a legislative intent section or some practice that is historically normal?
The normal thing is, again, it doesn't go in the code. It doesn't even go in the bill. I'm just saying that
you haven't asked them, gotten their answer, and then gone back to Dave with that. Is that right?
No. It is in their written directives for how to draft bills. Now, so that's their general standing thing. It's strongly discourage doing this. I pointed that out briefly to Dave. Now, it was after he'd made these comments, so I don't know. I think circling back with him, give him a chance. If he wants to bring it back to the group, and what I would propose then is, look, we're just making recommendations, right? And so in the report, whether it's a default in or default out, we just say in the report, you know, nope, there was a difference of opinion on whether it's helpful or not to do this. A majority of the group thinks this, but one member thinks this. And then we just move it all forward, because they're the ones who are going to have to resolve it. So
and it might not even be an issue, because Dave may just agree.
Yeah, he may.
One final thing to think about, similar to what Professor Butler was saying about how you'd be elevating potentially something in the statute more than how it usually would just be in legislative history, is we were kind of thinking, if you did codify something like this, and then later on make revisions to the enacted title, like, how do those revisions interact with this statement saying... And we haven't really thought that through, but it also seems to kind of suggest, because we might be adopting revisions that do explicitly approve or disapprove of court precedent. So it's kind of like, how would this statement interact with those down the road, be it through the work of this agency or if the council decided to do some revisions? How would that this statement, if it's codified, interact with those changes?
Okay. This may or may not, I think it is related to what we're talking about, but we certainly, in our previous life, and it would come up again in this iteration, talk a lot about, like, well, we got to make sure that in the legislative history we explain blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. How do we think that works? What was our setup, right, that we were going to make sure that what the council ultimately would say, here's legislative history, which is generally like the committee report,
right,
that what we say ends up being that. I mean, right. At least what's particularly maybe clever about what you did is you put it in the bill, which if the bill doesn't get changed, then is sort of in there. Of course, if the bill changes,
right,
then it looks like, no, we don't intend that. So who knows what that is. But what is,
right,
is that the conversation we should be,
sure,
having? Because there's lots of times when we're like, we're fine with doing this, but we need it clear that we mean blah, 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 or,
sure,
we're doing it for this reason. How, if we're making recommendations,
yep,
about here's what we're going to do with,
yep,
carrying a pistol without a license, with arson, with,
yep,
whatever,
yep,
how are we making, to the extent that we can, the council,
right,
can do whatever it wants, that our legislative history is the legislative history?
That's right. So and the answer to that is fairly straightforward, but there's one answer for this. So report one, and its appendices, right, is what was submitted to you for comment. Those are the recommendations. So that's what goes to council from us. So it's that report, which kind of, you know, summarizes, explains things some, plus then the specific appendices with the bill. You know, it specifically gives all of that. That all goes. So in terms of, like, what would be the legislative history, again, up to the committee, they could sweep aside everything we do, say, oh, you know, we've looked at that, it's great, gave us another idea, we're running with that, and it all just kind of gets brushed aside. But I think whatever we do, it's what we present, the final recommendations to the council and the mayor that are presented, that's going to be the legislative history. And for this report, it's the report and the appendices, which were given to you to comment on. Going forward, that's why we kind of distinguish. We have these memos that kind of provide some additional information. Those are not for comment. Those are for you to kind of like understand better and to help. But what we provide the draft statutory text and the commentary, right? That's the package in the chapter 2 for the general part, which, you know, we can address any questions about that. That's what we're preparing, as if that's what goes to the council. Statute and the comments. So the comments, you know, matter in the sense that they would help form the legislative history.
Assuming that the committee makes the decision
all ultimately up to the council, right? Like, we don't have any control about that. All we can control is, like, what goes from us being vetted onto the council, and at that point, presumably, and if they're going to base their decisions on what we provided, to some extent, that's part of legislative history. Now, what happens? And you know, it's a big piece of legislation. What happens if at the last minute, right? You know, there's some tweak to the theft defense, you know, that in the markup is finally done, but creates a disconnect from what we had recommended. Well, that's the same issue that you have all the time, right? Like, yes. You know, yeah, it's painful and it's going to be ugly, but we're stuck with the kind of usual legislative process then. So does that help clarify?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I would just remind, yeah. Don't know if it's been lost on folks what our office, the import of our office's comment on that whole thing, and that is, you know, so what? You know, we're telling everyone that may not matter given the current trend of the court to look at the plain meaning. So that may not matter. All of this and what I think are some gymnastics to try to maybe even codify it. I don't know if that's going to work ultimately.
Right, and again, ultimately, to the extent, right, gets passed, gets litigated, how's the court going to look at this? And well, with a even reduced number on the court, I guess, down to, I don't know how much they're going to be having any appellate opinions coming through. But
that's not getting too depressing.
Yeah, all right. Good. Any more questions or concerns about this? Otherwise, what I'll do, I'll touch base with Dave when he gets back. I'll say, look, is there something more you want to bring to the group about this? Do we need more conversation? Or would this remedy work for you of either way, of putting in a contingent, you know, recommendation on this and sending it forward? Would you be comfortable with that? Would that adequately, you know, recognize your viewpoint on that? And so hopefully what we can do is when we get that, if anybody has more comments on the other changes, we made a number of other changes in this second draft. If anybody has comments, you know, again, we ask for those to, I guess, be back by the end of this month, the 27th, I guess. You know, hopefully there's hardly any, because this is, you know, distilling it down. Assuming, Dave, we get kind of a clear picture there, what we'll do then is we'll issue a final draft to vote on then that hopefully can take care of this, and we can send it on either in March or, depending on the timing of the meetings, in April, and get the ball rolling there. Because, again, Codification Council over at the DC Council, they're gonna slog through this. I don't, you know, they're going to put it in the queue. I don't know how quickly it'll... So, all right, no objections. Talk about the general parts. This is chapter two, will be chapter two of the new general part, kind of core mental state definitions. And I can pull it up on the screen. There's nothing, again, that we particularly wanted to highlight, but I know you all have had this now for a while and may have questions or concerns for us. So I just kind of wanted to open it up to you all if you have any questions. And again, our report number 2 and all of its goodness. Anything at this point? Or, you know, again, so written comments on this, I guess, you know, we'd ask for by February 15th.
By this, and just to be clear, what is that?
Report number 2.
Okay.
Yeah. And we put, again, a memo together to accompany it that kind of explains things a bit more. It's more kind of making the case generally for what we covered previously of, you know, why element analysis matters, right? Why that change is really necessary. And then, you know, what we tried to do in general was kind of this go-around kind of where we could simplify things a bit. So if there's no questions, though, we don't need to raise it.
We will need till February 22nd.
Until the 22nd. Was there a particular reason for the 22nd, or, you know, it's like
we needed a week beyond the last time we met, but I think you had established that date to and got, in fact, the Redlands strikeout showing some of the changes. So is there a reason we can't have another week?
Well, the worry on that is that, unlike with the enactment portion with the report 1, all this general part stuff, that affects our overall timelines. Where I have to put together timeline for the next 20 months, how we do everything. And, you know, the problem is the general part, we have to wrap that up before we can move on to the specific part. And per the statute, each time we do kind of a round or a new draft, it triggers a minimum of 1 month review period. And we had about 2 months for this portion. So I'm reluctant to move it back further. I guess we can talk more about, like,
well,
you know, if that makes sense.
You'll move ahead and you won't have our comments. So.
Yeah. Are there other concerns or questions about process or timing or anything? Okay. Well, I think, right, so for now, it's the 15th, and you're asking for the 20th or the
22nd.
I'll get back to you and to everybody on that. I'll like I said, right now I'm going to put together a 20-month work plan to get everything done. So, you know, it's a week. Not a big deal.
And I had alluded to that at our last meeting. I not thought that was going to be problematic.
All right. Any other questions or concerns? Anything on the agenda for today? Otherwise, we will, I think, call it a meeting. Thank you. Good to see Professor Butler. Professor Butler, Paul.
Please call me Paul.
It's hardwired for you know. Yes. Go ahead. Okay. So.